listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send us a text at 2057. I've got a going to be an interesting guest. He's a tech entrepreneur. I've never interviewed a tech entrepreneur, so I'm a little bit scared because they talk about stuff and do things that I can't begin to understand. But I want to read you his pinned post on X from Tim Norton. I started to discover 25 years ago that the narrative being pushed didn't line up with the reality I was experiencing. Whoa, sounds like a lot of us, except he was onto it a bit earlier. All it takes is an open mind and heart and curiosity for knowledge, and the true nature of reality reveals. 20 years, 40 plus countries later, while building global tech companies and creating hundreds of jobs, combined with the last few years of the most destructive health, social, cultural and economic destruction I've ever seen, and the major strategic plans driving the world are in plain sight, and we truly can't do nothing. It won't end well for the vast majority. The damage and censorship is causing so many to wake up and stand, and relevant and even influential people risking it all and speaking up, sharing facts and critical thinking. This, the most heartwarming and encouraging thing I've seen for humanity, following the most soul-destroying global control and destruction. It's hard on the mind and life in some big ways. So many have lost or risk losing their jobs, which secure their lives and families. But in the end, when it comes to the big stuff that really matters, we all know we all need to fear less and care more. The world won't go in a great direction on its own. It's been long co-opted. It's deep, powerful, intimidating. But it takes a lot of people speaking up. Curiosity for knowledge, free speech, and open minds and hearts. The vast majority of people are not benefiting from the strategic plans, as is abundantly clear in everyday life, everywhere. Everyone has a role to play. Don't worry. Some will be more courageous than others. Just don't be afraid to question. Say what you actually see and think. It's a worthy journey and is the only long-term path we have to actual peace and security for our families, communities, countries, and the world. So says Tim Norton, and Tim Norton joins us. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Rodney. And thank you for putting that out front. You know, that tweet's only received probably, you know, maybe 20 likes, and I didn't do it to get attention. I did do it because, you know, I've been in privately speaking up my whole life, right? There's ever since I've had my first probably encounter and my reality check I could speak about now. But, you know, then eventually I saw these courageous people coming out, totally risking everything. And I was like, it's the beacon I needed to see to just be honest publicly. You know, I run a company that looks after 250 of the world's biggest companies. You know, we provide a video creation service for them all over the world. You know, I'm concerned about whether or not they will look at my views and then say, hey, we can't do business with a guy or a company like you that holds those views. That's held me, you know, silent for a long period of time. And then other, you know, things I don't want it influencing my friends and family around me. I don't, you know, necessarily want to be held back or disadvantaged as I'm going out into the world raising money and building my companies. I just want to hold my views and share them openly, openly discuss them, you know, have them challenged. I think, you know, we've all got lots to learn, and I've got a pretty clear view of what I think is going on in the world. I just want to share it and then be able to see what other people think. And if we have that free marketplace of ideas, then everything's all good. But what we've seen through the COVID period is the exact opposite of that, you know, the ultimate in narrative control, complete shutdown and lockdown. And that's why Elon paid $43 billion for Twitter and turned it into X. There's no other major reason he did it. It's the major reason. And when he sent that beacon and you see, oh my God, one of the richest people on the planet who's obtained his wealth through mechanisms that we can see with our own eyes. He has had to build things. He's had to be a scientist. He's a literal rocket scientist. And then at the same time, he's going, we're in big, big trouble. And that beacon goes to a lot of people, but it certainly reached me. And I was like, if he can stand up and put it all on the line, I know exactly why he's doing that. He's doing it not for himself, actually. He's going, everybody needs a beacon, and it's worked. And that's what prompted me to write that tweet and start opening up and this chat with you is probably the first, you know, video radio interview I've done speaking about what matters to me the most. And I'm 45 years old. From my perspective, I've left that a little bit long, but that's okay because I'm prepared and I'm researched, and now we're underway. So I look forward to it.
How wrong is it that we should be censored for fear of what it means to the companies that we work with and for, and all the people that work for those companies, that just to put out a post on X and speak your mind could imperil that? And that's what it actually does.
What it does, Rodney, I've raised $45 million, right, for my own company that I built starting on a couch, right? And I'd built several ventures before that. That's like, you know, $70 million, right? So, you know, I know a thing or two about taking risks. I know a thing about being courageous, you know? I built that company with my own money that I'd built from a previous company and then rolled it on before raising all that money, okay? I take risks on business and I have no problem doing it, you know, because I had a really good bringing up, you know, born on a dairy farm in Matamata, Kumatamata Aho, grew up there through Hastings, but then got to Christchurch, Wellington, Auckland, and then globally. And through that whole journey, I'm a highly courageous individual. People would describe me as a highly courageous, risk-taking entrepreneur. How do you do it, Tim? And then you look at what I've just, you know, posted, and the biggest ideas that I know about the world, the biggest truths about the world. In fact, the biggest thing I've spent time on has not been building companies. It's figuring out what's really going on in the world. And that's where I've been completely opposite of courageous and, you know, against the fear. And I tell you what, we all have, right? Yeah. So that shows the power of it, doesn't it?
We all have. I agree with you about Elon. Man. I mean, the risks that he takes in business are just out of this world. And then the fact that he's gone all in on Trump basically means he alienates 50% of his customers. And potentially, if they rig the system and Trump doesn't get in, they could toast him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he knows what's at stake.
He really
does.
But
that is bravery beyond brave. And you think, if little Rodney Hyde isn't prepared to speak out when he throws everything on the line and doesn't hesitate, he's the guy going over the top into the machine gun fire, right?
He is. He knows that if he doesn't do it, you know, there's no shot. There's no chance because we need a big beacon.
Yeah.
If he doesn't move, where's the big shot that's going to wake us up and go, oh, we can do this. Come on, what are we doing? It's okay. Speak it out. And it's working. The moment he released the COVID misinformation policy, the moment that occurred, my heart started to move. My mind started to move. And I thought, something's happening. Something's finally happening. And it's happening in a way. I've always been waiting for someone with him.
Are you meaning when Matt Taibbi and Schellenberg and others to see the Twitter files?
Yeah, and he took the actual policy, you know, a legal policy on the company. He removed the policy. That was a signal going, guys, it's no longer misinformation. That's all it says. He doesn't have to say much about it. Thank you. And then start speaking openly. Then he unblocked the doctors and the scientists. You guys had Dr. Asim on here. You know, he's a courageous cardiologist. Yeah. Lost both his parents, probably to vaccine injuries.
Amazing.
Amazing guy. And the smiles on these people's faces, you know, and at the moment what I do on X is all I'm doing today until about now, I think, I'm commenting, I'm liking, I'm feeding these people and their courage, because I look and I go, you are miles ahead of me right now in action, but we're right in the same place in terms of, I think, knowledge and heart. So this is good news, and I'm going to feed you guys first and foremost and make sure that you have more reasons to keep a smile on your face, because when a hard journey is on, you got to smile on the way, otherwise it'll wear you into the ground. And that's what the new soldiers of humanity need to be, I think, you know.
Oh, you're wonderful. You're like, and we'll take the bullets with a grin on our face happily.
That's the way. Look, and I learned that through business too, you know.
Because our fight is righteous.
It is. It really is.
Now, you said you started to perceive a different reality 25 years ago?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. Look, I'll just speak very openly because the person wouldn't be known. My first girlfriend, you know, at the age of 16, we were about to have sex, and something was very wrong. So I stopped. And then to fast forward the story, I discovered that she'd been abused as a child. And she'd also lost her father.
She abuses it. Oh, she was abused.
She was abused as a child, yeah. And she'd also lost her father recently too, which in circumstances that could possibly have been interpreted as suicide. Pretty messy situation, you'd say. Very challenging situation for a young woman. I was, you know, just turning 16, as we both were at the time. And for me, I'd just come from what I would describe as a, you know, relatively traumaless childhood. You know, the worst thing that happened to me in my childhood was my mum left. And she left, and when she did, I bawled my eyes out. And 15 minutes later, when she arrived back in the driveway, you know, I dried my eyes and Dad went out and picked her up in the car, you know. 15 minutes of my mother leaving, you know, that's the worst event I can think of my childhood. Fortunate? Absolutely. But that's the game my parents played, and I benefited from that, right? So by 15, 16, I was bored of school. I was wondering why the bell rang and you had to run around. I was asking questions. What is this all about? Where's it all heading? And the answers were like two lines along, from your parents, from teachers, from anybody. And I was like, no, no, no. What I mean is, it's an open question. Why are we doing this? It's a dialogue I'm trying to enter into with intelligent people around me, because my mind's presenting me with all these alternatives. I just want to start talking openly. And those conversations weren't easy to open. Now, that led my parents to worry about me, going, how is he going to socially function? He's going to go out there questioning all these things. But they support me, but also they're worried. They're normal parents and they're dairy farmers, you know, really soul to the earth humans. But that journey, you know, meant that when someone needed someone and that had something, you know, very traumatic that had occurred in their life, and their life was probably at a pivotal moment there, sexual abuse, unconfronted, father now passed away, mother in the house, youngest, you know, three boys, always the baby. And now I've got a job, a real purpose. That was my first purpose, was to be a good man and tender man for this girl and woman who was my girlfriend. And secondly, for her mother. And I was the man about the house. And I was well ready for it. It was the most purposeful thing I could do. Now, that was great. That carried on for some months. But what happened is, you go back to school and next day, the same person who's been abused, the same person who's lost their dad, kids will give you a bit of, you know, patience about your dad loss for maybe 2 weeks, and then it's all back to normal. But nothing's changed for that person. They're on the start of a traumatic recovery right now, right? And school didn't cater for that at all. And then I started to look around just with open eyes and open heart, because I had to understand what was going on in her life and her mind. It's the first time I'd encountered something like this. And I could suddenly see people who'd been abused. I could see it around me. I could tell by the way they were looking, the way they would hang their heads, the way they would move. And those perceptions were very real and very correct. And I could approach people and I could be more supportive to people around me. And that felt good. That's a big wake-up call, because obviously no one was telling me this was going on. It was more like, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. And school has to fit, kind of just has to fit everybody. But it's like, but this is everybody. Do you know the percentage of people who have been sexually abused? The number of girls that have gone through it. And I don't either, but the number's so high. And therefore, if we don't look at it as a major group, you know, then what are we actually doing about this? The answer is, we're not doing anything about it. We're just kind of steamrolling over the whole thing. So that woke me up big time at 16, right? That's the biggest one. Second thing I did is at 18, I read a book called Overcoming the Obstacles to Human Potential. Waking up, Overcoming the Obstacles to Human Potential. A psychologist from the 60s, you know, universal knowledge stuff, you know, that you can discover how we become autonomous, you know, robotic behavior and things, how you break the robotic behavior and become awake again, you know. That one book, and I'm not a big reader, to be honest, Rodney. I didn't read lots of books, you know. That was the book. And it just captivated me. I was like, if I do nothing more than this book, it'll change my entire life and everything I do. So that was the second moment. And I mean, maybe I'll just leave it at that, because once that happened, now I just looked around and go, well, I know what I'm being told. And these shorthand answers, these sound bites, are absolute bullshit. I know that now as a fact. Therefore, by default, I will assume that all that stuff is coming from somewhere which is of no real use to me to help understand reality. And reality is the only thing making me truly happy. The reality of the challenging situation my girlfriend was in, her mother was in, that was real. And then I could go, okay, now I've got purpose. Yet for 8 hours a day, I'm supposed to go to a place which I'm struggling with the purpose on at the moment. And that doesn't mean I don't think schooling is any good, of course, but I was at a point, you know, 15, 16, where I'm a thinker now, you know, my mind's taking off. How do I do it? And I was in a normal public school and it's all good. And I'm glad for the whole experience, but my mind is now opening up. I'm going to need to find a pathway forward where I can continue that opening up, and life started moving from there.
You've probably been psychologically profiled, given what you do, have you?
I didn't even know what that fully means, actually, Rodney. You mean professionally or?
Yeah.
No, I see. Look, I've definitely done, you know, gone in and out.
You haven't been.
Years and used, but no, I haven't.
I suspect that you're highly intelligent. and high on empathy. Because an empathetic person feels that about other people.
Yeah.
And an intelligent person is saying, everyone else is going along with school, bell rings, they run. An intelligent person just wants to know why.
That's right. That's all it is. That's all it is.
And I hated every day of school, primary school and high school. I absolutely detested it. You know why? I couldn't understand why we were doing it.
Why were we doing it? Yeah.
I wasn't even brave enough to ask the question.
Mm. Oh, don't worry, Rodney. I didn't speak up too much. Yeah.
I was just sitting there thinking, why on earth are we, this is so dull. This is so tedious. These kids are so obnoxious. This teacher is so boring. Oh, you do this to please your parents. And then people would say to me, and schooling is the best days of your life, so enjoy it. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm not feeling too good about the rest of my life.
That's right. I look forward to what's ahead beyond it.
Yeah, and when I left school, I felt great. Never looked back.
Yeah.
But school did not work for me.
No, it can be very tough.
And I wasn't bullied or anything, but I'd see kids being bullied, and I just couldn't understand how kids could be so mean and so miserable. I couldn't understand how they could hunt in packs and insiders and outsiders. And I see it happening. I've got three kids at school, and I see it happening with them, you know, and it's just horror stuff. So you got to the stage where you're questioning what everyone else just accepts and gets along with. You're feeling yourself having this responsibility and work to help others. That's a long way from where you are now, though.
No, it is. I just look at life as, you know, it's foundations layer upon layer, you know, and these moments in your life that change you, if you let them, they will continue to change you. And so if I go back to where I started, you know, I started life on a dairy farm in Matamata, but not that I lived there really. By 1.5 years, I was gone, right? But I was every morning. My parents were share milkers, you know, so they put me in a hay bale every morning at 4:30, milk the cows. So the reality is I've been conditioned to be around animals and be in a hay bale for 1.5 years before I could even perceive consciously what was going on. I know that had a profound effect on me, and I want that profound effect to continue through my life, and I'll probably get benefit from it later. That's how I feel. My dad had one motto: as long as your mother's happy. That was his motto in life. Simple as that. He married my mother because she has a heart of gold. Very, very simple, powerful values. I'm 45 and I'm still not married. I'm hopefully very, very close, or having kids too. But there's a reason for that too, you know. I'll talk about that in a moment. But in terms of those values that they had, right, that created a childhood which was outstanding. It was just outstanding, second to none. When we asked for things, get them, you know, when we did things that were not in our interest, we were told off. And that was perfect, because after all of that, it was just enough conditioning, I think, to come out knowing love is just baked in. I don't even know what love is. I don't even know what it's
baked
like.
In.
Stability's baked in. I don't even know what instability is. I don't know. In my unstable moment, as I said to you, Rodney, is my trauma story of my mum leaving for 15 minutes. It's in my mental capacity. I remember that moment because there were no other moments. I mean, that's how well they did, right, as a job. So what happened is, so by the time, it took me a while to figure this out, don't get me wrong, and I'm looking, you know, retrospectively now, but people would always say to me, why are you so good at taking risks? How are you, you know, and for a while I'd tell them, it's like, oh, well, you know, I kind of started this company, and then I'd kind of rationally explain my journey that I, you know, how I got there. But then as I grew on, I realized, well, here's the biggest thing. I'm an incredibly stable, well-founded human. And that's got nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me. My parents did that. They created that. And I was fortunate to receive it. I was a receiver of that experience, and everything I did to capitalize on it, it doesn't matter. They were driving that experience and they nailed it. As a result of it, that stability creates the need to go, when you look around and you see the instability that other people have, then you go, well, I think yin and yang, call it what you will, you know, the water needs the rock to splash on, you know, otherwise it'll just erode everything. You know, it needs a rock there to keep the sea out there and keep the rock here. And so I believe in that. I believe that that's the way it needs to be. And that's how purpose is found in this world. Otherwise,
and you could take risks and always come home to mum.
That's it. And it's maybe even metaphorically come home to mum, Because really, what does come under mum mean? It means whatever happens, you'll never be alone from a love perspective, you know. And you've had too many years of love to ever have that challenge. It can't be challenged. It was baked in all the way from the hay bale, you know. I would have felt it. I would have felt the warmth of the fact that my parents were beavering away for us while I was in a hay bale. And I wasn't over-nurtured. It was just, you know, you got a bit of survive for yourself. We were taught that germs were good growing up. You know, we grew up on farms and sometimes on an orchard and stuff as well. And it was, you know, they'd put their feet in the cow pats in the morning to warm up. Let the dog lick your scar, you know, your scab, because, you know, it'll look after you. So then you can imagine what happened when COVID happened. And suddenly it's like, oh, by the way, Tim, you're not allowed to talk about anything that you already know as reality. Evidence, real, it's total reality. There's nothing you can do to convince me. Because it's not an ideology, it's a reality, right? My immune system's been incredibly strong. I don't get colds and flus now for 13 years. I've complemented my, you know, immune system with now with, you know, lots of veggie juices and stuff, you know, make sure I get all the veggies in, supplement with some things, healthy thinking, you know, and exercise. And those basic things make a big difference. And as a result of it, the immune system responds and with a lot of strength. So the idea that we weren't allowed to talk about natural immunity, I mean, it's not absurd. It's a 180 degrees on reality. It's what it is by design. It's that's how you take control of human minds. You 180 it.
And by people, design.
It can't possibly be that, because that's the opposite. It's like, no, that's exactly why they do it, because then you come to the conclusion, it can't possibly be that.
Absolutely.
Because it's the opposite. And that's the power of it. They won't move 60 degrees or 90 degrees. It's a 180. Yeah.
And the fact that they're hypocrites and they're sentences all contradict each other and their ideas are shambolic, that's all a feature, not a bug.
It
because
is.
That it's an adds to feature. Our confusion.
It does. And that's all been proven. You know, they've developed these techniques, haven't they? You know, scientifically, they've developed them, they've spent a fortune on them. They're military techniques, you know, to control enemies and then to control a population and corral a population to get an outcome. Sometimes you might need to corral a population, but the problem is, has that power, and what are they going to use it for? It's never going to end well.
I believe you. I believe that. And like I see it, you're in the great fortune to looking forward to having kids. It's the most blessed thing ever in the world. But you see it with your kids. They're trying to teach them, oh, you could be a girl.
Yeah, it's tough. What?
No, you could be a girl.
Yeah.
And that is insane, right?
It is.
But they And we'll come to the day, they do that to destroy them.
Yeah, they do. Because that protection I received was to protect from ideas that they knew wouldn't help me be the stable human that I'd need to be the person I'd want to be later in life.
So tell me what's happening in the world to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you look at the history of the world, you know, you start with you know, some of the key things like the banking system, the central banking system. Where does it all come from? Who prints the money? You know, it always comes out as debt in the world that we've grown up in anyway. There have been periods of time like the greenback by Abraham Lincoln, issued by the US government, actually a non-debt-backed currency, you know, so that the government could print the money and not owe anybody, you know. And without talking about some of the challenges of inflation, which we're seeing now anyway in the system we're in, it's always about debt. So they print the debt up, which means there's an asset somewhere. It's pretty simple. We all learned that in intermediate. I think I did my first economics where we talked about an asset and a liability. First exposure to it, 12 years old or 11 years old. So you look and you go, who's spinning up the money? Fast forward and extrapolate it out. That means more than anything, because if you're spinning up the money and then you're going to tell the entire society the way you are going to interact with the world around you and each other will require this super product, the product beyond all products, and we literally print it out of thin air. So who prints that money out of thin air was always, to me, we've got to know who's printing it. This doesn't make any logical sense. There's a liability and an asset. But if the earth is there and there's all our natural resources and all our assets, then there's all the human capital. Well, nobody paid for us. You know, we're a creation of the earth as well. Therefore, who has this idea and how do they implement that control where they can monetize the entire world at the super product level? And then everything we do is a derivative, you know? And I play in the derivative world. You know, I go out there and I raise capital and I build companies and I print money and the cap table, you know, build the revenue, grow the equity. We all know how to play that game, but we're not at the center of it. We're on the outer edges. And I'm only interested in the central core because all I want to know is all my mind wants to know is what's really going on. And it wants to go to the core problem, not the Band-Aid. So firstly, central banking. You know, how does that work globally? And some tough things out there. I think, you know, it's not a crazy idea to know that the Federal Reserve of America is, you know, is not a government institution. You know, it's a brand name, you know, and that's been known for a long time. And but most people would go, surely it's not a brand at 180 degrees. It is a brand name. It's just a brand name. It doesn't take long. You can go beneath the surface. And you go, so how was it created? Created by a single act of parliament in 1914. Oh, really? I've got it. It was created in a location with a bunch of the world's largest existing bankers, which then would have come back to the British pound. But let's just start with the US dollar, because it's already taken, you know, hegemony as the global reserve currency. Starting with the US dollar, they kicked it off at a date, you know, in 1914. Most people really struggle with the idea that this currency is created out of thin air with no backing to it by a private corporation enacted under a special corporate law called the Federal Reserve Banking Act of America, you know? That's what it is. It's a special company that creates a super product, and it's the only one with the right to do that. That is a major, major thing, because in the end, you can never pay back the debt, which means now we're going to have a society where you can get ahead, but not everyone can get ahead ever. It's never going to happen in this system, because it's a debt-based currency back at the central banking. So that's the first thing that's going on in the world that I'm of deep interest in. And the second thing would be media. You go, now we need the hearts and minds of humans all over the world. It's the greatest power humanity has, you know. Humanity's created physical things. It's created better shelters. It's created incredible infrastructure, all amazing things. But the human capital is the hearts and minds, you know. That's what we've got. And as we go forward, we really need the hearts and the minds there too. Too much heart, ideology will take you over and you'll have useless ideas, you know, impractical ideas. Too much mind, and you won't care enough to do what matters, you know? It's a hearts and minds game. And so you look at media and go, what has the media system that's been propagated the world, the main one, what does it be? What's its purpose? And you can tell by the consolidation of power. It's been about seven companies at the top of the vast majority of the Western world media for many, many years, you know, by design. And therefore you go, well, what's the purpose of these companies and the owners? And it's like, well, it's not really to make money, you know, because why would you bother making money if you can literally move the hearts and minds of a vast majority of the humans or Western world, you know.
Oh, what power, does it make money? Power beats money every time.
Every day of the week, right? So you get, you know, and then you go, well, if it doesn't make money, it's actually pretty good, because then no one can compete with an alternative model potentially. So let's keep it sort of flat on its knees, really, and then no one's interested in it financially. Great. Then we can just control, you know, the hearts and minds of all the people. So that's the second thing I thought, money, and the second one was media. And until those two things move, I'm as a very optimistic person, you can probably tell, I'm deeply concerned until those move, you know. So Elon came and did X at a time where the consolidation of media power became so clear through the COVID, you know, just a complete domination of control systems that something's happened on media.
And so biased.
Yeah, yeah.
Openly biased.
Yeah.
Openly telling lies, openly contradicting themselves, openly changing the narrative.
Yep.
The fact that opinion leaders would all use the same phrase, like the night before the email went out, here's what we're saying tomorrow.
Yeah.
But and that all repeat it.
That's right, because people don't know better. So we better line up the narrative and take the global narrative that comes, whether it's World Economic Forum or otherwise. These are very real organizations, though, and they have very real influence. And as a result of it, they have created an independent power structure, independent of sovereign countries, which I have no interest in. I think sovereign countries are an essential part of maintaining, you know, a global order that has independence, because that independence means free marketplace of ideas. Multiple countries think differently. You can trade together. You can have relationships in all sorts of ways. You can disagree openly and then maybe agree on something in 5 years from now too, and then disagree on something else. That is indeed the process. A free marketplace of ideas is the only way to activate the human minds on this planet. And then if a free marketplace of ideas, it'll help activate the heart, because there'll be full of purposeful ideas. People will start to realize what's really going on. And then they go, oh, our purpose is to actually, you know, free humanity, you know, free our minds and hearts. Purpose. Everyone can get purpose from that, which is great. So that's the big thing, I think, you know, the media's held back is the free marketplace of ideas. So the second way the money system does it, I think, is by trapping people in a system whereby they kind of, they've sold most of their time to a purposeless activity other than do enough to pay the mortgage to a bank, that in this case is just printing money back at the parent company somewhere, or somewhere up that, you know, food chain. Because if you go back through the, you know, New Zealand banks, Bank of New Zealand and the likes, of course, it's all obvious, you know, but, you know, they're owned out of Australia. But then if you go to the cap tables, it's owned back to, you know, the same large central bankers globally who then sit behind and own the Federal Reserve. And I never felt comfortable saying this stuff publicly, but now it's all out there on X everywhere, you know. And so, oh, great, finally, intelligent people who, thoughtful people, caring people can just talk about it. Now, if someone can prove the opposite of what I'm saying, that'd be great, you know, because I don't want it to be happening, you know. And my test has been this, Rodney, by the way. So all the digging of the world, you know, people would try and make you feel crazy for it, right, for a long time. You know, even your close friends, you know, they just want you to feel a little bit crazy so that you could tone it back in conversation, so that you wouldn't bring it to the table when they were having a lighthearted discussion. And I'm a pretty intense guy, you can probably sense, you know, when I'm up there, and that intensity comes from a lot of depth, you know. And so I had to learn to regulate myself. Was that useful? Yes, useful tool. But did it have an impact on me coming out and helping humanity? Oh, yeah. So it's a double-sided sword, and now's the time to move on it, because we need free movement of ideas, and that's the only path to the truth, and it's only the only path to uniting and bringing together all this power we've got among people and then sovereign nations. So some of the biggest things for me.
Who's the they? We keep all of us.
Oh, yeah.
On RCR, talk about,
I know.
They want this, they do that. And you realize I'm hot on gender theory in schools. I talk to the principal, talk to the board, teachers, eyes just glaze over. Go to the minister, just flannel you off. And then you realize they didn't decide this, the UN did.
That's right.
And we just followed along.
Yep.
But then you say to yourself, who is this that we're fighting against, in your view? Mm-hmm.
You know, the way power structures, you know, I one of the reasons I got into business, just one of them from the purpose perspective, and why I've been willing to compromise some of my values, I'd say, speaking honestly, in what I'll do in business. And I mean, I've had some interesting ideas, Rodney. I've done some cool things that are like right bang on the heart and mission. Then I've had some businesses with, you know, they have some heart and mission in them, but, you know, it's something to build jobs, create, you know, grow the economy in different locations that I might be in, support those countries, support my own life, my own family, right? You know, basic stuff. But I think if you look at a power structure when you create it in a small organization, the biggest company I've built is 200 people, you know, spread across maybe 27 nationalities around the world. And like somewhere in that management, you could go, oh, that's what they've said. You know, it's come from above. And some of those employees don't know who above is. They see you on the all hands, but they don't know, right? They're getting a proxied message. And that helps me understand how a power structure works, because I go, well, I built a power structure and I'm at the top of that power structure, you know? And so that gives me pure evidence and credibility. If I was to speak to Rodney Hyde in 2024 or anybody else, I'd go, well, I've learned a bit about power structures and I do know how they work, and I get called they. I totally see it, because they don't know who they are entirely, right? Now, that's not where I developed my journey. And I look and go, okay, so if you go right back to the, you know, the major times of like exploding populations, massive birth rates, you know, where's it all heading? You know, it's like, wow, you need to grow humanity. We need people digging all the resources out of the ground, literally, physically chipping it off the edges. And, you know, so for a large period of time, the incentive was, if you were in a power position in the world, such as you print the very money, the super product, for example, or you're captains of the industry, which is in its infancy and about to become ginormous, it's, where do you get your money from? Well, you get preferential rates from your other mates who build the banks and print this money out of nothing. And then the rest of it, they're human resources. And if we can get them to dig the resources out of the ground, give them a fraction of the money, we make a whole lot of money, and you print it for free anyway, so you're all sorted, super product guys. So that process, you know, and I'm in business, right? So I'm not like anti-business at all, as you can imagine. Of course, it's not about that. This is big business. This is the ultimate big business, is actually about total control over the world. And that's not business as probably you and I know it, you know? It's total control of the world. And so they needed all this humanity, all these people, all these resources, you know? But then it's come to a period of time where, you know, the advancement of technology, you know, the reality is I've been building robots for 20 years, right? And I don't mean physical robots, but, you know, I build software. So there's little robots. They get jobs done. It makes things happen that people used to do in a slower, more incumbent way. It's not rocket science. I do that with my heart on my sleeve. When people say to me, oh, that's great technology, if they really want to chat about humanity, I'm like, yeah, but I'm just building robots. You know what I mean? It's not feeding my soul, right? I'm just building robots. It's a smart move. It's a good move to position myself in society. You know, I can make some money and get myself in a good position. The best thing about the purpose of it is that if I can build robots, then I'll have some credibility with society rather than being someone picketing on the side of the road who doesn't know about it and might be caught in an ideology and then certainly has no leverage to have impact. So I was always keen to get yourself in a position. It's like, well, the guy's been building tech. Surely he's got to have a reasonably scientific mind, because you have to have a scientific mind, because when you build software and software companies, you have to have precision, you know? And so I've enjoyed that journey because it's going to build my credibility. Hence why when Elon came out, it's like, he's literally a rocket scientist, guys. Like, you know, so he doesn't just throw things around, you know what I mean? He's got a lot behind what he's saying, you know, by the time he comes to something, you know, not saying he doesn't act quick, but there's a lot behind it, like more than you'd ever imagine for him to go, you know what matters? This matters. That is a culmination of everything he can see about the world. So if you look at this power structures, you've got the problem is, you know, once you're printing the money and then you're setting up the industry, you had these mighty, mighty money creators and mighty industry leaders. And those families that create aristocracy, you know, see families, they still exist today, you know, and they've never kind of been kicked out or diluted heavily. They just hold a large portion of the world's resources, period, you know. And they still hold the printing resource, which is still the number one, the money printing resource, as long as we're all in fiat currency being diluted through inflation. So, you know, those aristocratical families are real. They kind of are more quiet than ever most of the time. But you have people like George Soros, who's a bit more out there in the open, and the son Alex, you know, they just actively and proactively go and push these agendas, and they will spin up and create non-government organizations. And, you know, by default, the average person goes, oh, NGOs. Oh, that's a pretty positive term, isn't it? I'm sick of the government. We'll get the NGOs. That sounds good. They're doing it for the right reason. It's like, no. It's just an entity. It's just a structure. It's a brand name too. You can do anything in an NGO, right? And so they spin up nonprofits and foundations and NGOs. You know, they create so much noise for the average person. The average person goes, I don't even know what to make of it. But in reality, those institutions are creating the basis and the fabric of what we are supposed to live in our society of the future. They are defining the rules of the future. The WHO is funded by Bill Gates and a few others. That is a matter of fact. And that fact should concern everybody, because that is by no means a way to get healthy communities globally. He's very, very good at controlling a product, controlling a license, taking it into including developing countries, putting it in, getting it embedded in the government. And as their GDP grows, you're taking a tax off the whole country. Extremely good at it. He fought against all the open source movement, you know, directly. No one fought the open source movement more than Bill Gates. And he's taken that same idea into this part of the world now. So I think that's some of the big things driving why we've got these institutions. There is extreme, not just wealth, the creators of the world, you know, actually of the civilized world, I still have a big part to play. Then the second thing I'd like to say, Rodney, is that I think there is a large volume of people who have been compromised. And that is not a funny idea. The entire idea of intelligence agencies, you know, they have assets. And everyone knows what an asset is. It's something you own. So how do you own a human asset? How do you create a human asset and take them from a human and turn them into an asset? What you do is you have something on them that would destroy their lives if it was ever revealed. And once you have that, you have their silence and you have their cooperation. And today what we have is a whole army of lieutenants, soldiers at every level of society that have been compromised. They've been compromised by watching child pornography online. The numbers are phenomenal. It's a fact, which means every one of those people, Rodney, they don't want to jump on a call like I'm on a call with you right now. At any point, they don't want to be in that position. They're already gone. They've sold themselves inside. But not only that, someone knows, and eventually someone comes knocking on their door. I don't mean figuratively, though, you know, someone comes knocking on their door. If they're useful in all sorts of ways, you need people to do all sorts of work, frontline work, drive trucks, you know, plant bombs in buildings, demolish buildings. You need people to go out front and represent the medical industry. You need people to go out and represent, you know, what society needs to do in terms of censorship. There is a large volume of compromised people who are not the big captains of, you know, money making. They are the henchmen, and they are in the millions. And that's the state we're in. And I can't see any way of unlocking that, because, you know, if that came out, they'll lose their wife, they'll lose their kids, whole life collapses. They will do anything to protect that. And that's exactly what these
are. And humiliation, totally humiliated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did we see an inkling of that with Epstein?
I mean, look, Elon said it out loud. He said it out loud through pictures, and he just said it out loud the other day in an interview. You know, who's involved? And it's like Gates and Reid Hoffman. And that's exactly what it looks like. You know, he's gone. Those guys are gone, you know, particularly Gates. Therefore, whether he's driving something, he has had a history of eugenics in his family too. You know, there's a bunch there. But now he's got something over him too. So it's a double hit now. You know what I mean? And if there's one thing people like that believe in, it's themselves and their position in society and their ability to make their own rules for themselves while implementing rules that they would never live by them for everybody else. You know, you can live in a 50-room house on the edge of a lake and have your own private runways and fly around the world in your jets and have no restrictions. But everyone else, you have to think about every time you breathe, guys. And if you make homegrown food, you know, you're hurting the environment and the CO2. So it's that bad, I think, and it's that locked up, which is why, by the way, Rodney, to wrap it up, finally, when Elon Musk came out, you're like, he's not compromised. I think I truly believe it, because you can't take that level of risk if you're compromised, because you'd be blown. So that's my hope, is that he hasn't been compromised. And I think it's my, you know, a fact that he hasn't. And as a result of it, he's going to speak courageously about everything, including that happens.
And you feel the same about Donald Trump?
It's interesting. Look, here's how I think about Donald Trump, just so you know. I look at RFK, Robert Kennedy Jr. I've been following that guy and his, you know, Children's Health Alliance for years, right? Maybe 10, 12 years. And you can just feel his humanity. And so I look and go, you know, he's running for president. Could he become president? Oh, you have to have hope in that. Absolutely. Otherwise, you've got no shot, right? But the key thing he brings to the table, which we need with Trump, because Trump, I don't know, I don't even put him up, if you know what I mean. I just go, RFK. Now, that's a guy, if he has leverage with Trump, well, now we're getting RFK. And I want RFK in there, reforming health, for example, you know, opening up these agencies that have sought to, because, you know, the CDC, then it goes around the world, New Zealand inherits it. Oh, we're not going to go against the US CDC. We don't have our own mind. We're not truly a sovereign country on that front, so we don't. So the idea of RFK coming in with leverage, with 17% arguably of, you know, the voting power, is what he was kind of getting to. So that leverage has been used, whether it's documented or otherwise, in a deal. And that's a good deal, this one, because Trump's also going to be, you know, pressured by these other interests, you know, as well. Obviously, and it'll be major pressure. So the idea that there's a real leverage, because voting power, prove that the people want this. And if you don't take me, then they'll take me, and the whole thing can fall a bit. So that's that. But so RFK's been my main channel, to be honest, when I look at that lens of Trump, you know. So I think there's all sorts of, you know, not my kind of guy on the whole, but at the same time, come on, it's unpack it all. There's this stuff over here that he's saying that I agree
but
with.
But my point about Trump, my point about Trump is the blob doesn't want him.
Yes. No, that's right.
And therefore, they don't care. They can handle Obama. They can handle Hillary Clinton. Yes. They can handle Joe Biden. They can handle Kamala Harris. But Donald Trump is wild, and they don't have the dirt on him, or he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And so he can't be controlled.
That's right. It does appear that way. Exactly. Because if the dirt was there, it would be out. Because you could drop that thing at any one of these key moments, and they haven't. So that is my hope too on that front, I think, as well. I think he's, you know, corruptible. I don't mean that, you know, but he's human. He wants to be perceived as a great leader. And RFK's come in, for example, and said, hey, mate, you can make America healthy again, even though you're physically unhealthy and you eat cheeseburgers and diet. It's all good. You can lead that vision, and that can be part of your legacy. What a great way to appeal to someone who might be heavily ego-driven, but still human. It will be affected by the humanity of someone like RFK. And the way that one's played out has given me hope, right? It really has. I'm like, there you go. So I think he's being moved by really good people.
Well, I listened to Casey and Kelly Means on a podcast. Mm. There was one with Tucker Carlson, and then they went with I'm trying to think. It was a follow-up one. I listened to it just 2 days ago, and I'm trying to think of the host. But they engineered the meeting. And what astonished me was Trump and RFK didn't do this over just a couple of meetings.
No, I would imagine not. It's a strategic plan being executed.
This was a
in the right direction, and I hope.
Yes, and they said the shocking thing about the discussion that they observed with Trump and RFK, and RFK said this to them, it had nothing to do with votes. And the point was made that he cared about the health of Americans, but more particularly, he knew about the level of corruption in central government. And as RFK explained it in terms of big pharma, big ag, and big food, Trump could get it. Because it seems the entire resources of the state had been thrown against Trump to destroy him. The courts, the state, the FBI, the media, all aligned to attack Trump. And what's happened? The more he's attacked, the more the people love him. I love him because I think he doesn't stop.
Yeah. And the unstoppableness.
And as you say, there's a lot of personal things that you and I wouldn't necessarily want to sit down for dinner because he's a bit of a braggart. He blows hard. He's a very gifted communicator and very, very clever and able man and politician. And he didn't do that apprentice show for 17 years without learning or without having the ability to hold an audience. He's compelling. And he's funny. Yeah. I watched him being interviewed the other day. I was rolling around on the floor laughing because he was so funny. So he's got skill. And the fact that they're coming after him suggests to me that he could lift the lid. And he doesn't actually have to lift the lid on very much. Because just imagine what happens if he lifts the lid on the JFK assassination. And I don't know the answer there, but imagine if the answer isn't the received narrative that the government did a cover-up, that maybe some government agents were involved. Once you learn that, the whole world's a different place, right?
It is.
It's like our COVID, but writ large.
Yeah.
And if you're in these agencies, that's your total death knell.
Yeah. Now, this, Rodney, this is an interesting segue to come to New Zealand right now because that's a country that's near and dear to us, you know, and it's a following country, like you said. It's received the orders and someone was compliant enough to process them, you know. In our case, you know, we had definitely what I would say is just the worst leader in the history of, you know, my life, and really, really hard, you know, disturbing for that too, you know. And I voted for people like Helen Clark at the time, Rodney, you know, and I like the fact that we set up the KiwiSaver and the Kiwi Bank and things, you know, over that time, over Cullen, all sorts of things. I voted Green before as well when they were about the environment. I've done that too. And then, you know, all hope lost in both of those two parties based on what happened last year. Just completely gone, you know, particularly obviously what they did through COVID. But then the ideology that's held now by the Green Party, I used to vote for Green, you know, because I want the environment supporter, you know. But it's not about the environment anymore. It's about ideology without understanding and knowledge and experience, which is truly useless, you know, in this world. That's what I've learned. Otherwise, wouldn't be able to be an entrepreneur, wouldn't build a company, you'd fall over in a heartbeat because all your ideas, well, only 10% of them are actually any good, right? The 90% of them, you have to try them and fail and go, got it. Then you let them go and you move on through that journey of experience, which you know and I know, you know?
Yeah.
So
a politician doesn't have to do that.
No, you learn that over time. And you're like, God, you know, sometimes you think maybe I'll get into government and give it a good bloody nudge. But it's like, nah, you'd have to have some pretty serious leverage out there to have any impact, you know, be coming into an impact through that institution. You'd know better than me by a hundredfold. But just back to New Zealand, I think that it seems like even at the moment is like, how do we get out of this? Because if you don't recover the truth after something so, you know, such a large lie, that's had such devastating effects. If you don't And if you don't uncover it, where does humanity go? And that's why the US has turned from being a real mess into actually potentially a beacon again, which it hasn't been a beacon for me for my life. It's been messy, you know, Now it's turning back into a beacon again. And that is what, again, Elon's probably saying. He's like, it's a mess. Everyone in the world knows it's a mess. You walk around the world, everyone says the US, oh, gosh, nutters, you know what I mean? What a mess, you know? That's been the way for decades. Doesn't mean they're not powerful, but how they're described as a community and a society and their values are, you know, messy. So they're trying to actually have some values again, which means you've got a clean house. If you clean house, now that would be a wholesale change of the US, you know, back to the time in the 60s where, you know, both the Kennedys were assassinated, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all done within 6 years, all done just coincidentally, obviously not. You know, a pivotal change, you know, in the power structure and how that country worked. And they're trying to make a pivotal change. And so back to New Zealand, you know, the idea that, you know, they're concerned about the loss of, you know, trust in public institutions. Like, but what if COVID, we got it all wrong? What if we reveal the truth that we knew and then we went against it? Guys, people are already discovering it anyway, okay? Which creates, those people will never trust you until you flip to the truth. I'll never trust those institutions until I see a recovery.
Never.
You just like in business and in life, you never trust someone until there's a recovery. Then you might build a bridge again. Until that point, that distrust has broken the bridge and burnt it. So it's already burnt to the ground for a whole bunch of the population. It's always been hard to know how much because they've censored all the media and controlled it, right? But now that it's opening up, you start to go, well, there's a lot of people, isn't there? There's a lot. So therefore you go, what do they have to be? 50% of the population before you go, oh, we better just tell the truth because then we can probably get more trust to regain, then we're going to lose. I hope not. That shouldn't be the name of the game. The name of the game should be to go, you know what, leadership-wise, it's just a fact. We've made some really major mistakes. I know politics would be hard. Who do you blame? Everything. But if you can rise to that higher moral ground, like truly, this is a country. And all of the population that you've lied to, people like me, an entrepreneur, people like you, Rodney, contributors to society, I've got a long runway ahead. You've lost me. And I'm not looking to be lost, but you've lost me unless I can see some courage that you're going to go and open up the big issues and do it with a bit of fearlessness, knowing you're going to upset a lot of people. And then you go, yeah, but well, how do we deal with the fact that that all these people inside the institutions also lied? And how do you, it's all too complicated, guys. You know, the truth will set things free. There's going to be challenges, but at least now, everybody who, for example, might think critically, everybody who might know something more about what's going on, you've got them. It's all they're looking for is a movement in that direction. So that's one base you've got. Secondly, the people who were lied to, you've now just brainwashed these people, okay? They're now going to get brainwashed. Again, they're now susceptible to brainwashing, and they'll bring their children up to be susceptible to brainwashing because they're going to pass that lie on, and the lie gets cemented, and that's been the hardest thing to see in this world is these large global lies get embedded as reality because they force it down everybody. New Zealand is the ultimate. The country is the ultimate long-term business plan. It's perpetual. It's absolutely perpetual, right? I've never built anything perpetual, right? I seek to build something that has a life term, you know, and it might pass on to an acquirer and stuff, and then maybe it does live forever in some form, but not really. We're talking perpetual. It's the ultimate place you're supposed to build assets. And the human capital and the human hearts and minds of New Zealand, we want the right truth in their minds. We want them to be able to see for themselves, think for themselves, discuss openly with each other so that Kiwis are resilient in the mind and heart. And by censoring, you are taking away their opportunity to learn and hear alternative views, be challenged on their own views. All of us need that. That robustness generates robust minds and hearts, less susceptible to future brainwashing. So they've got to do something about what's happened through COVID. I know there's so much pressure going on. No. Come on, we're out of the worst. Just let it be. It can't let it be. We've got net debt of over $80 billion, $70 billion that was printed during COVID. I live in Singapore, based out of here for the last 9 years, right? And you look at the way the country runs at a profit. It's not a tax-based economy. It's a savings-based economy, you know? And it's an investment economy, you know? And I wonder, what have all the ministers been doing coming to these APEC summits, listening to the Ministry of Manpower and listening to some of these, because they outline their blueprints of, you know, and I've kind of looked at it and gone, well, some of the stuff would be good in New Zealand. We don't even have to invent it. Let's just grab it and kind of open up a dialogue about it first, get the public educated on it, and maybe kind of make some of it happen. But I don't see that, you know, and that always concerns me because when you're a small country, you don't want to be debt laden, and that's the situation we've got in. And most of that debt was not only done by waste through COVID; it's the opposite. It was done through destruction. So it's a double whammy, you know. So I'd love to see that happen. You know, I'd love to see some opening up of this what's just happened in the last 4 years, you know?
Well, here's you doing your bit. We've got RCR.
Yeah.
We're speaking up.
Yep.
We'll have more people. We're going to grow the station so more people listen, more people become aware. And then it's going to get to, I hate the phrase, but it's going to get to what people call a tipping point.
Yeah.
But it's going to get to a point where you come into government, either as a bureaucrat or a politician, and you think, do I defend what's gone before and become culpable of the cover-up?
Yeah.
Or do I clean house?
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. I like that.
And it's going to get to a point. It's going to get to a point where a prime minister will rise up and he or she will say, we're going to clean house.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to open the books. We're going to open the health statistics. We're going to open the Pfizer contract. We're going to find out what's going on each and everywhere. And that's what we're working towards, because it's not that any of us have the truth.
Yeah.
But we can't get to the truth if we can't have open, free, and frank discussions. Where, 100%. Like you're sitting in a blue sky business meeting, you can throw out the craziest ideas ever.
Absolutely. Yep.
Elon Musk threw out the craziest idea when he said, I'm going to have these big mechanical chopsticks and they're going to catch a rocket. Now, you'd do that in a government department. I know we can't do that. You just move on. But you can throw out the craziest of ideas. We used to be able to do that easily not that long ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we can't.
Isn't it funny too?
I got a scary story.
No, shoot.
I got a funny story to share with you, which I've said before on RCR, but I'll repeat it because not everyone would have heard it. And it's so telling to me the older I've got. And it's this concept of the greater good. And when I was a first-year MP, I discovered that the IRD had some rogue agents who were tolerated, if not encouraged, and were very, very tough on taxpayers. And taxpayers were committing suicide because of their sheer toughness. And that was being bragged about in the office.
Hmm.
I might have to lighten up. You know, I've had so many suicides this past 6 months.
Hmm.
And I knew the family, knew several families that had lost their breadwinner because of the IRD being overly zealous on a person that got behind because of business not going as planned.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kicking this up in public. And a very senior, as senior as you can get, you know, I'm going to say top five civil servant, who I knew well before I was in politics and I respected greatly and still do, and who respected me, came over at social function and said, oh, Rodney, I need to talk to you about, you know, this blowing up on the IRD. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah. He says, you know, you can't be doing this. And I said, but it's true. And he said, yes, I know. And I said, well, how can it be wrong to be speaking the truth? And he said words that chilled me then and chill me much more now that I reflect on it. He said, it's the greater good.
Good, yeah.
Because what happens if people lose faith in the IRD? And I believe that noble lie operates in health, the police, the courts, that they're too scared to let their mistakes out because they realize their authority is built on a house of cards. So that one was a shocking insight to me. So you're in the Ministry of Health. Oh, yeah, no. Whew, did we get it wrong on COVID? Oh, man, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Just, you know, we can't tell anyone, though, because they'll lose respect for us, and that would be bad for society. Or that's the most kind way of thinking about it. Or at its heart, we're part of a process. I'm paying my mortgage.
Yeah, that's
it. Got the kids in a good school.
That's the big one there, right there.
And we're running an operation to control the people of New Zealand so they're more accepting of what we know is good for them.
Yeah.
And I didn't question it. And when I get to the top of it, I'll know what's what. And you get to the top of it, and you can't walk away. You spent your whole life getting there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But the whole thing of government, it's extremely weak, actually. It's a stack of cards because they only have the authority that we give them.
Yeah.
I mean, if everyone, and we know this through society, unless they're prepared to shoot you, if everyone doesn't follow a rule, there's nothing government can do.
Yeah.
If no one put on masks, nothing they could do. They can't lock everyone up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But we put on masks, right? Because we believed in it.
Yeah.
And if that belief goes, and I'm with you, I think that belief is going fast.
Yeah.
And I love America. And I'm watching this election. And we had a president who absolutely was incapable of choosing what he would eat for breakfast.
Yeah.
So clearly his presidency was being run by people we have no clue who they are.
Yeah.
His vice president is as silly as a sack of spuds.
Yeah.
Now she's running for president. She can't string an interview together.
Yeah. And that's the message to people. The message to people is, guys, it doesn't matter, okay? It doesn't matter. Don't think you can have any hope because it doesn't matter. They just, this person isn't important, but that's the only choice you get to make, but they don't actually have any power. You kind of know it. Even if you're an educated idiot, you kind of know it because you look and you go, come on, just by listening with your own eyes and ears and seeing, you can tell, can't you? You know what I mean? You couldn't even run a 200-person company, a micro business like I do on that front. You know what I mean?
No.
With that capability, let alone.
She couldn't work for your business.
Country, these people. Yeah. You know, I like the idea, Rodney, so of the helper cards and building up, you know, building up based on something that is solid because it's all perpetuity, you know. I would like people to have faith in public institutions. I would like to have faith in public institutions.
Yes.
The fact that I don't have faith in public institutions is because they're built on this house of cards that you described. And I think hiring all those bureaucrats and government was part of the cover-up because, like you say, you just once they're in their employment and the link to their mortgages, all of which they can see, those people just through self-interest alone will just go like, I'm not a courageous person by default anyway. Plus, this is my entire financial plan. I've got no interest in going against the narrative. In fact, I'll do covering up and, you know, have a laugh about it.
And we've got a credentialed society now, so you can be a plumber, happily working as a plumber. You post trans woman, aren't woman. That gets attacked on X.
Mm-hmm.
Your boss gets a call from the plumbing registration board.
Yeah.
And says, you got a problem. Because you've got a guy in there that's hating on people and you won't be able to get any jobs in the schools.
Yeah.
And everywhere you look, there's an ability to compromise you. And so what do you find? It's retired professors that speak out that climate change is nonsense in terms of
that's right.
What's causing global warming?
Yep. Nothing
to
lose anymore.
They have to be retired.
That's it. Nothing to lose anymore.
Yeah. It's the doctors.
Kind of going, what am I going to do? You know, I'll speak my mind finally.
Yeah.
You know.
There's, it's, and the others dare not speak out. Yeah. And they've seen what happens if you're a doctor and you speak out. I've worked it out with teachers and principals. I couldn't understand why they wouldn't engage with me about teaching my little girl that she could be a boy, right? Normal people that I know, I see them at the sports dues. I see them in the community, right? We're friends. Might talk to me about it. But then you realize if they say, oh, Rodney, you're right, it's all rubbish, and it gets out that they said that, they'll be for the teacher's tribunal.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that we have to achieve, and this is where Elon's been great, is free speech.
Free speech. It's a
so you and I can talk. We can talk in public.
Yep, that's it. That's really, really
and that simple. not be threatened. And here's the thing. If we all start talking, they can't arrest everyone.
No, that's dead right.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Tim Norton.
You too, Rodney.
You can follow Tim on X. I didn't check. What's your handle on? Do you just
at Timmy Norton.
Search on X for Tim Norton? At Timmy. T-I-M-M-Y.
N-O-R.
Just personally, you're looking forward to getting married and having a family.
Oh, I really am. Yeah, I am. I have kicked it down the road a little bit longer. But I was trying to set up a base for the family and building companies as well. Like, everything's taken 10 years longer than I expected. So be it. But I really am, and I know that being a dad will make me just a better human, better man. And then I'll struggle not to have the courage to speak, which is one of the things I'm looking forward to, because I'm like, I can't.
You will have the courage. I tell you why.
That's it.
Penny Marie of Let Kids Be Kids.
Yeah.
I said to her on air, I'm not a violent person. I've never had a fight in my life. But if I saw a man pretending to be a woman following my daughter into a toilet, I'd try to stop him.
Absolutely.
And I'd get physical.
Yeah.
I know I would.
No, me too.
I said, I feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And she said, you have to do what would make your daughter proud.
That's right. There you go. It's as simple as that.
And our daughters and our sons want their dads to stand up for them and be their knights in shining armor.
Yeah.
You do not want to fall short for your kids.
Yeah.
So you your kids will make you braver.
That's it. Maybe that's what I'm saying.
They want you to know.
It'll make me braver, Rodney, because it's kind of like now I can't hold back because I just can't. You can't do it because I know you grow up in a world getting
misunderstood,
and then they're going to ask me. So why are we? And I'll go because I let it happen. Can't do it. I have to be speaking now.
You don't want the dad who was a Nazi collaborator. You want the dad that was tortured and shot. Actually.
Yeah.
That's the dad you want to be. Tim Norton, wonderful to talk to her. Give us a text on 2057. Email me inbox@rallycheck.radio. The man's in Singapore, made a big effort to come on our show. Speaking up, you can follow him on X. We're going to have you back, Tim.
Thanks, Rodney. I've really enjoyed this, and it's helped me open up. So thank you, truly, because this is where I want to be at in life right now, speaking like this. So thank you.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.